As you can see, the ninth race is posed to you as initially how to use the X's and O's in concept with the matchup. The matchup concept is what we just used on that West Boy 2. You could have, and you will if you go over it, find an existing pace line that would put the horse on top without using the projection, the fraction projections of the matchup. A lot of you are fascinated by Tom's projecting of times from variance and by Jimmy Bradshaw's seemingly mystical looking over the page. I figure you're going to run about 44 at 4 against the 2. But this all has scientific etiology. So let's take the horses in this ninth race and see what happened to them in their last race. Gallant Shooter maintained a very early pace and was leading at the second call of the 44-3. Valiantly tried to hold on at the stretch, but was beaten by a horse called Zarmoro, who, upon looking up his record, which you can kind of extrapolate from here, but he closed in 24-3, as I recall. That's correct. It's in here somewhere. Axe Bargain's last race was a zero race, but he ran fairly well for the 6-furlong portion. Today's a 6-furlong portion, so you look at his 6-furlong efforts and you see that he's had a couple of good ones. The Santa Rosa one is somewhat subject to scrutiny, but the one where he finished within a length and a half at Golden Gate on a good track, here's where we can determine whether that track was good or fast. It was fast. Don't believe it when it says it's good. Tom will tell you about par times by class and distance. The second call par was about right on, and the final time par was just about on for that horse. So the fact that the man said it was good meant that the day before it wasn't good, and he had to tell the public something for that race because they wouldn't believe it had suddenly turned fast. 20 is the average variant at this track, and so they ran on a 20 daily variant, and so nothing to indicate that good. This is for the benefit of you folks who are asking that question. Nothing to suggest that good meant anything different than it might have been in the estimation for the entire day. Some of the times might have been off by a fifth of a second. But for this race, you can take it. Stock and Trade is a horse that, thank heavens, everybody said this is a loser. What do they determine that from? 18 starts, no wins. How many of you throw out a horse with 18 starts and no wins? I understand the trainer's no good at it. I didn't know that until yesterday. Thank gosh I didn't know that. They didn't know that when they bet it. How many of you throw out a horse automatically if you've got 18 starts and no wins showing? Well, be careful. Here's a little exercise. You go through on this horse. Look at its average purse value, 169% lifetime. In its first, if this is 18 starts and a 21, and 3 starts, it had 2 wins and a place. First 3 starts, then suddenly nothing. But it knocked at the door, and it's got a lot of reasons. You're not going to get big price on a horse that's got 3 wins out of 9 starts or 5 wins out of 18 starts. Your big price is going to come the horse has got one or no wins out of 18 starts. You got to be. How did he lose? Why does he not have any wins? A lot of ways to answer that, and one of them is he's a horse looking for a class level. Since he won, he's tried 25, 16, 1250, 1250, 1250. He started coming into his own at the age of 3. At the end of his 3-year-old cycle, he started coming to his own at 1250. 16, he couldn't make it. At 16, he did fairly well stretching out. At 25, he only did good for the early part of the race and couldn't stay with him. At 12.5, once again, he was very good early, but he ran against too fast a closer. Now today, he's driving to a new low level of 10. New low class level of 10, and we have to ask ourselves, what's he going to do today based on the fact that he's got 3 decidedly plus efforts in a row behind him. One before that, nothing showing, broke in a tango, might have had something to do with it. Then he goes back at 12.5, he did well. At 16, we don't want him. He made one valiant effort at 16th in a fairly slow situation. 75 is a pretty slow speed rating, so that's why he did well, but he did well early. So did he quit in the last race? We're looking at stock and trade now. Did he quit in the last race, or could he not handle the final fraction? That's what you have to ask yourself.
He was seventh in the nine-horse field in the stretch. After 12 length, beaten by 12 lengths, he wasn't trying, I don't know. When the stretch called on, I think he was quick.
Well, the second call, he started dwindling. He definitely did not do well in that race, but why? He was very good, so as was Gallant Shooter. Gallant Shooter held on a little bit longer, but both of them gave in to a final fraction of 24-3. They couldn't hold it. They were outclassed by a horse named Zarmoro. Now, I don't know anything about Zarmoro, but Tom Brohammer keeps up with the field, and he'll tell you. What will he tell you?
Zarmoro stepped up off of this race and ran second to a horse called Cool Way Home in a $20,000 or $25,000 race, and he had the third horse in that race well died. Zarmoro really got good for a couple races.
So this horse at
Early, the same thing we had yesterday.
Certainly.
Because we're talking about stock and trade, whether or not he gave up the ghost in his last race. So we're going to talk about Gallant Shooter having done the same thing. You know, did they quit? What did they do? I'm going to tell you something about Goldgate Field. $10,000 climbing level. The par at that racetrack is 22, we'll say 22, 45, and I want to make sure I get this right, 45, 1, 1, 10, and 2. Now that's the par for that class level. Now look at the race that this horse was in. 22, 44, 3, forget the final time.
109.2.
Yeah, but forget it. It's really not important here because he's no longer even contesting it. What is important, though, is that generally speaking, the time around the turn at this level at Golden Gate Fields is 23-1. That's the pace of the race. From here to here, that's the normal time. They go 22 into the turn, and they come out of the turn at 23-1. Consider what happened in the race he was in. They went 22, the normal time, and then look what they did around the turn. Now, this is 3 lengths in a quarter of a mile, 3 lengths under par. That is really running. Those horses were cooking around the turn. Now, if he wasn't looking for a place to lay down, I'd be surprised. look what he did in there. That is a solid race for both of those horses.
So, the more knowledgeable
you are about what a horse should run at that level, the more readily you'll see what I see without even knowing. I know it's faster than it's supposed to be because I don't see any of those times anywhere in the matchup. Consequently, the matchup shows that these horses are going to take over by the half against somebody who cannot close as Zarmoro closed. Clipper Skipper, the only reason that the people might say Clipper Skipper, he came in fourth in that same race with Zarmoro. Therefore, he is the best of the three that was in the tandem, and yet two things happened. Even though it was pinched at the start in its last race, it had plenty of time to do something. It could have made one good move, and it didn't. In its last race, it just went from bad to worse. Plus the fact that that race in which it was winning with Zarmoro was really, really its only plus race. The only race that if you'd have read him off of that, he could have been a contender today. So Clipper Skipper was a one-time only shot, whereas Gallant Shooter, he's got pluses, four straight plus signs. Stock and Trade has 4 out of 5 plus signs. Mr. Kane doesn't really excite anybody, I don't think. Gentle Rub is stale by anybody's standards. The horse would be a marvelous factor I love General Reb. And so I looked at the date. I was figuring, how can I reconcile winning this race with General? How am I going to get rid of General Reb and excuse that horse? How am I going to figure how we could tell him he shouldn't have won the race? And then I saw my saving grace. He hasn't raced. That's why he didn't do well, because he's got a lot of good things going for him. 23-1 turn time, which is exactly par. And he makes a move toward the end with regularity. So he would have been a major factor in that race had he not been stale.
Dale, how do you know he hasn't been running on training
tracks? I'm sure he has been running on training tracks, but at $10,000, now if this is a 25, this is Tom's field, I'm just infringing upon it. At $25,000, $32,000, on up, allowance, yeah, $10,000 claimers, just stack them yourself, $12,500, not that much difference. They do not come back off of a bullet workout and sell and win. That he came in next to last only, though. He did beat one horse.
It's got to bother you a little bit, too, off of that that freshening period, that he drops from 16 all the way down to 10, and you consider they paid 20 for him. Now, that's not too encouraging here. If he were coming back at 16 or 20, you'd have to weigh that a little differently.
Now, what is it we all know about maiden winners when they try to go in with winners the next time? What are they, whether it's a behavior characteristic of the horse or it has something to do with trainers, I'm not equipped to tell you. But I've noticed just by noticing, what do they always try to do? If they're front runners, if they won their maiden race wire to wire, they try to steal a race. Is anybody dubious of this statement? I have never seen it to fail. If they ran 22, 45, 110 and wire to wire, the next time they try to run 21-4 and hope to discourage the winners from chasing them, because that's the only way that either the horse feels it can win the race or its trainer feels it can win the race. I never talk to the horse, and trainers don't talk as much sense anyway. I mean, they're not going to tell you all their secrets, but I would presume it's a combination of a training maneuver which they've seen work before and that the horse just wants to do it again. That's how I won, Daddy. I'm going to do that again. And they also know, the jockey knows, that he's got to do it a little faster than he did it against maidens, so he's going to project, if he's going to try to steal the race, he's got to project it faster than 22. You know that Largon cannot win today's race, even though it is the favorite, I think. It's the favorite to do so. In first place, it broke its purse at 71, broke its made at 71% of the purse, not equal to or better. In the second place, its times were not all that terrific. The variant did not affect him. It was the average variant for the track, 20. The good, therefore, is not to be taken into consideration.
Same hit we made yesterday, too, and that is we had several people that handicapped this race when it was run. And one made the right call on Largon, and I think two or three others did not. And the only thing I suggest is it goes back to what I said earlier today, and that is draw a line through Largon's last race. Just draw a line through it.
See what it's
done. And then evaluate Largon on the other possibilities. Because he wasn't freshened, he wasn't claimed, there was no reason. I mean, looking at that race, I can't explain it. And after watching him run here, and then again after that, I still can't explain why he happened to get away like that. He just ran big one time. Throw a line through that race and see if you can make him win. And of course you can't. And then consider the other thing, and that is, will he be allowed to go 45-2 here?
You see, he can go
21-4, and that's what he's going to definitely do. What his best effort today is, he runs par. We got too many horses that can put him away in the second fraction. When you're what Tom say was three lengths better than par. You've got two horses in here, three lengths better, but they're going to put him away. He's not going to, but he's going to try to steal it, and that's going to set the pace of the race.
What's an M12? Equal to, usually. You say a maiden 32 is equal to 16. What's this?
Well, I don't say that.
That's speculative. That's a rule of thumb that they're have.
Rule of thumb on this.
Well, I can tell you what it is. I can tell you what it is. I got the answer.
He knows exactly what it is.
The maiden 12 fives at Golden Gate Fields are equal to nothing. There is no other level that runs anywhere. There is no other level at Golden Gate Field that runs within two lengths.
That's why I usually leave them up.
There is nothing else. They don't run. If they ran $2,000 climbers, that would probably be the equal.
Yeah. Okay.
They're two lengths slower than a $6,000 climber.
Thanks, Tom.
Uh-huh.
However you want to figure that, the horse is a false favorite. I think that everybody in this room. Everybody in this room, including the more newcomers, would figure better than the San Francisco Bay Area public in making this horse a favorite, that he is decidedly a false favorite. Now, looking at it from a non-scientific point of view, you've got seven horses in the race. You've eliminated a favorite. That leaves you a six. You've eliminated General Reb on a staleness, unless you want to put a little side bet on him and don't tell anybody. Now you got it down to what? Five horses. All you got to eliminate is one of those, and you got a show horse. You get rid of two of those, and you got two horses left. And you're going to bet two horses to win, which you should. You got the winner. I mean, I make that point in the end. You don't have to get rid of very much to just make a bet on stock and trade to show. And it pays 640 to show. So you people who don't like 640 win mutuals, try 640 show mutuals. Now, if you want to get a little bit more daring, and you can eliminate a couple more horses, and I'd say you could certainly eliminate Clipper Skipper. I don't think you can eliminate Gallant. Gallant's the number one horse in this field. But you can sure make a case against Mr. Kane at this distance. So if you don't do it scientifically, or if you do it scientifically, you should have some money on a horse that's going off at 15 to 1.
A lot of pluses. His turn time was really pretty slow, pretty bad.
Well, I'm glad you observed that. That's a marvelous observation. This horse is essentially a slow sprinter. I mean, adjust his 112 and 1 for the variant, adjust his 112 for the slop, adjust his 110 and 3 if you want to call that November 30th race that, and you still got a fairly slow horse. The fastest speed rating he's ever earned on a fast track was an 86.
He was running against speed. In other words, he had a tendency to keep up. That may not be his true speed.
Right. When he gets his head in the slop on the 30, all you have to do is just adjust that horse. We did it in the readouts here. You just adjust the horse, and you'll still find that he's the worst of your sprinters. He doesn't show anything at the fractions where he's going to have to show it in this race. You're going to have to show it. You're going to have to be able to keep up with a maiden winner early and be ready to pounce on it when it starts to fade. And this horse is not, by his best second call time, is not showing any ability to do that. Now, you can either just take the pace lines and adjust them off as we would have. You can adjust the second race back for. Tom has already shown you why you can throw out the final result of the last race. You can go two back and take the internal fractions and adjust for the fact that it was a sloppy track. Or you can go three back and just take it as it is with the alternate sprinter route method, and you'll get stock and trade and Gallant Shooter as your top two in the computer. Or you can do as I've done in going on here, for those of you who've asked how Bradshaw does it, and you can project times as you see on page 78. Play around with this, but don't rush into it. It may not be your cup of tea.
You know, on the other hand, looking at some of the elimination rules that have worked effectively, like the top five odds, that combined with the fact of over 18 could have a strong story to throw it out before you even look much further.
Okay. That what you have to do is make an exception here, and Tom will give you his for reasons we pointed out. But go ahead.
Careful with that 0 for 18, because not one of those 18 races apparently were at $10,000. So as far as I'm concerned, the horse is starting all over again.
New little class.
And if you look at these 12.5s, those three 12.5 races, I think he had trouble in two of them. The other one was pretty good, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Even when he had trouble in, one was pretty good.
That's right.
Do you use the top five?
No, I do not.
No.
No.
But that number shows up as, what, 86%?
It does. It does. And that, but generally speaking, the ones that you pick are going to be in the top five anyway.
You know, don't find many $32 horses in the 86%.
Right.
I think that's why it's big to get some.
See, when you're telling people, there's two different things we espouse here, so be careful
when you hear these words coming out. For instance, we tell beginners, in Dick's beginners column, he tells them to watch out for certain types of races. When you get, this is one of them, when you get a little more sophisticated, you find out the big bucks come from playing those low percentage races.
Now, I have offered several times in these classes a set of guidelines for accepting contenders, which are pretty generous. And yet, we'll often get the race down to three or four or five horses. Now, Dick Schmidt, in his beginner's column, in the next follow-up, is going to reprint those. And that's my approach to a race like this. Well, X Bargain for one, but this winner stock and trade fits those guys. Very simply, any horse dropping in class, I accept, at least in the first blush. And stock and trade fits that. But I'd rather deal with those than the five odds that the Morning Lightning will set. At San Anita, you got a very good one. But that's across the country. You have it.
Kind of misconstrued us as saying just do that. We said here's a little help for you beginners. Look first at the top five and ties on the morning line and be sure you don't leave them out of your consideration. Now we suddenly have made a rule. 3 weeks later, the guy says, "You made a rule. I heard you. The rule was just take only the top five and ties on the morning line." That's not what we said. That's a heck of a way for beginners to make sure they don't leave out some logical contenders.
Better than times.
Sure it is. Sure, but do you want to, you know, well, how much of 80% do you have to win to do 70%? You've got to win 90% of your races.
I personally would accept responsibility for my own fate here, and rather than leave it in Jeff Tuff's hands and sanity and some other.
It's still a good thing to be sure you haven't somehow forgotten the also eligibles, or you haven't forgotten some horse that's in that top five. Why is he there? And let's figure him. But you've got a seven-horse field here. You've got a unique situation in this race, which comes along, I'd say, maybe once or twice a week if you play every day of the week. This is representative of the kind of price and the kind of situation that you'll observe. New low-class horse who has flashed early speed in three straight races. Early pace, early speed, whatever you want to call it in this instance, it would be accurate. He has been... His positions have been shown that he's threatened to come out of this long losing slump. And it's not that he's so great. The true answer in this race is, what's he facing? He's facing a maiden winner who the public has made a false favorite, and he's facing a tandem of two other horses, three in total, that if you use the tandem concept, he being the worst of the three automatically is the best of the three post-tandem. So you've got three or four aspects, and you've got the hidden APV, the high APV, hidden, 169%. And who's going to see that when it's zero? So you have to go back and take lifetime. You get 155 last year, 140 if you take him straight. He had three top-notch races at good prices when he was a kid. And suddenly he's looking. So put all this together in your mind. Look at this race. And then see if this is your cup of tea, this kind of projecting times and seeing what it's going to be. If it is, it'll give you a much clearer view of the race. Tom does it one way. Jimmy does it one way. I'm trying to take the two and synthesize them in doing it this way. Tom does it for me. He knows what they should run. He knows when a horse exceeds the pars. He knows that that's a horse to watch. That's his criterion. When a horse puts together a couple of fractions that are better than par, or puts a whole race together better than par, that's tantamount to a horse to watch. That horse is definitely a horse to watch, along with the horse it ran with. If you like doing it that way, I'll tell you, it'll certainly give you a view of the race that will answer so many questions you have. It'll just automatically answer a lot of your questions. And on page 81, you'll see a form that you want to Xerox it that will help you project the matchup of any race. You take the horse, and this is what Contender Scan does for you. So if you've got Contender Scan, just write down some of the Contender Scan figures. If today's first call projects as, so you take the best first call you see of any horse in the race. The only difference is you want to look at every horse in this sense. Because you don't care whether that 21 and 2 is going to be around at the end. He's still going to make a 21 and 2 that's going to affect what your real contenders will do. So put down, if it projects as, and this allows for several races, if it projects as 21 and 4, this horse, meaning the horse that you're rating in this instance, will be about put what he can do against a 21-4. If he runs 3 lengths off a 22, he's going to run 4 lengths off a 21-4, you'll say, right? But do it the old-fashioned beaten lengths way. It's imperfect. It's not very scientific, but when you get down to the total reality of it, it gives you a good view. Now, if today's second call projects as, you want to see how they're going to handle the first fraction. Now you go to the second call. The only reason you put that first fraction is to see if there's some early bird in that horse who can upset the whole apple cart by running a first fraction that nobody's ever seen before. The bottom part is very important. If today's second call projects as, and you find the best horse runs a 45, how does this horse run against a 45? Or 45 and 2 or whatever it is. And you'll find that some horses close. You have to put in the beaten lengths. Remember, how does he close against a 45 pace? If he gains 5 lengths toward the end, only put in how he does when he does well. If you start putting in how a person does when they do badly, that you're not really learning anything. You have to assume that if you're putting the horse in, it is in form today, in condition today. Follow what I'm saying? When we did this West horse, we didn't say, how does it do when it's doing badly? We said, when it wins, what does it have to win against? What can it win against? Or what can it come in a close second against? How does it react to a given second call? You'll see things that you never dreamed you'd see before if you use this chart for a while. You'll say, hey, my gosh, why didn't I see this before? This horse only closes well against a 45 and 2 if it's sprint, or a 111 and 3 if it's a rut. Look at, when I put down 110 and 4, he's out of it. You'll see that. And then pretty soon your mind will just automatically do that. You won't need any of these charts. If you had to go through and fill in every one of these charts for every race, you would sit home making charts all your life. And we have some older clients who love to do that. They don't want to play the race. They want to fill out charts, and it keeps them alive and sustains their health, and there's nothing wrong with that. But after you filled in so many charts, Daryl Martin is going to be here in 2 weeks, I'll tell you. He spent 3 years with me filling out charts. He loved filling out charts. And he had a garage full of charts, my wife. He did too. His wife made him throw them out. But chart making in the beginning is a very, very good education to doing it automatically. Spencer has been making charts. Now he's finally going to the races. Spencer's got a chart we never heard of. They're beautiful. Got all sorts of lines, dots connecting. So I love Spencer's charts. We're going to put all his charts in a book and sell it for $28. See what this can do for you? What this one little form can do for you? Aren't you just wanting to get home and start filling it out right away? It'll tell you everything you want to know. It'll answer your questions. You say, yeah, but how does this horse do? The answer's right here. If the first fraction is going to be so-and-so, what will this horse do? And you go back over the races where it has run well and answer that question on the next line, and then pretty soon you've got today's matchup and you've got today's projected pace. And what's fun about it is that you can stand out there after a few weeks of practice and you can, what's his name, Trevor Demon, well, we've got another track opening now, but if you get out there, whoever's the track announcer is, you can be it. You drive people nuts. You get out there, and Beetlebaum goes to the front, and filling up second is Abner Crabtree, and on the flank is Emmett Brown. And the guy, and if it's really happening that way, the guy next to you, he's listening to the announcer saying it just after you say it. Hey, man. And he goes, I got a beer. What's going on here? I told you that was fake, Mabel. It is what happens. And if you're wrong, so you blow it. But often you're right, and you amaze yourself. You just call that race. And Daryl used to love to do that. He always wanted to be a radio announcer anyway, so Daryl would get there. And so-and-so goes to the front, and the guy's be looking around. Daryl, we're talking about you.